Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 120. I'm Braden.
I'm Dan.
And the rest of the guys are dead.
We've written them off the show.
They're done. They're out. Just kidding. Today we got an awesome interview lined up for you. It's not going to be the same case file you're used to. We interviewed Doug Serignano and his book, American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups. Really nice guy. Quite the staunch Trump supporter. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but very nice to talk with, and he open to other ideas. So it was a fun interview.
Yeah, Doug, his book, we talked about it, and it's mostly a compilation of interviews. He's got some of his stuff in it. I know we've got it in it's going to be in our meat draw package.
It's already been sent out. Andy Taylor's cool. Getting a copy.
So, yeah, if you don't have it, it's a pretty cool read. He interviews some great experts who have been kind of following the leads. They've been developing their own theories about what happened. Great bits about the Pearl Harbor being one of the greatest false flags ever perpetrated, JFK assassination, all kinds of great stuff in there. And we had a great time talking with Doug. Really super nice guy.
We did this interview over Pod Week. So I got the chance to sit down with the book in studio, was kind of perusing it. And I read a couple of them, but I was really intrigued and kind of captured by the JFK interview just because it's such an interesting topic and it's one that I've always been really interested in. So I really like honed in on that one. Very interesting stuff. I actually learned a couple things I didn't already know.
Yeah, a lot of the interviews with the experts, these people, the conspiracy theorists, like they've taken a lot of connections and weaved them together into a pretty convincing narratives that kind of fit pieces together and kind of take, you know, maybe varying reports around that time or kind of strange events that happened, consecutively or around the same time. And they put it all together and it's like, hey, this kind of, some of this might have legs.
It was a really fun interview, and don't worry, you're not going to miss Andrew and Zell because they're both on it. And why don't we send it over to that interview now?
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, very special Pod Week event. Today, we're having a very special guest with us, interviewer and author Douglas Serignano. His work has appeared on Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet1.com, Disinformation.com, a load of other websites. His Twitter is at US Conspiracies, and we're here to talk about his recently published book, American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups.
Oh, yeah.
So, Doug...
Thanks.
Welcome.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks for joining us.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. You guys got a successful show, so I appreciate being here.
Hey, and thanks for taking the time to set up Skype, something you don't normally use for the live stream here for us, so we appreciate it.
Yeah.
And Doug was also, just before we get going, Doug was very kind to set us up with a book to give out as a raffle. So if you're a $10 supporter or more, starting next month, we're going to be having raffles, and one of the things you could win is your own copy of American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups.
Oh yeah. All right. So how do we want to start this? Want us to ask rapid fire some questions at you and you just take it away, or?
Yeah, why don't you start with questions? That'd be good.
All right. Well, we'll go with a couple pre-given to us by your publicist. Just we'll start it off slow and then we'll work in some a little bit tougher stuff as we go.
Okay, can I just say book is a book of interviews, and I got some of the most famous conspiracy theory authors in the world, Jim Mars on the New World Order, and G. Edward Griffin on the Federal Reserve.
Yep.
And Noam Chomsky, and about nine others. And it's published by Skyhorse Publishing, probably the biggest publisher of conspiracy theory literature. So I think that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So, Dan, you want to start off with one there?
Yeah, I just wanted to get into first talking about, I think your book has come out at the right time. Definitely conspiracy theories are becoming, it's pretty much undeniable, conspiracy theories are becoming more popular in popular culture. Do you think that, do you agree on that?
Because of the internet, I think so much information has spread because of the internet, I think, even though it's been around for a while, I think it's slowly growing more. And also, Donald Trump believes in a lot of the conspiracy theories. And I think maybe that's another reason that my book's maybe coming out at the same time. Because I think he's a product of the internet, really. He got all his information from the internet, it seems. And that's another reason why my book is coming out at the right time. Like, you go over some of the conspiracy theories that Trump believes in. Like, he believes vaccines can be dangerous. He believes elections can be stolen. And he believes in all of them, really. And I think, you know, Trump's got a lot of faults, but I think he might have the right political instincts. I think he's not a professional politician, so I think he could be good for the country. I know you guys are from Canada, though. I don't know.
Yeah, we get all the same news up here, though. We just don't have to live in the political turmoil.
No. For the most part. You get all the news and just like not have to deal with it.
we hear it all, but it doesn't affect us as much as our southern counterparts, you would say.
Yeah.
So what got you on this train? What got you on down the rabbit hole of investigating all these like wide conspiracies throughout the American government?
Well, you know, I grew up in the 70s. I think maybe part of counterculture back then, it was a spirit to like question the establishment, you know? So, and then in 1979, I started getting this underground alternative newspaper called The Spotlight, which was, I believe it was the publication of the John Birch Society. I think they actually get a lot of things right. You know, I talked about how the Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations run the government, how the Federal Reserve and all the central banks are privately owned and it's a corrupt banking system, and how, you know, the big bankers want to have a big brother world government through the United Nations. So I got into it through that underground alternative newspaper way back in 1980. Then with the advent of the internet, maybe I got into it even more because there's so much information on this stuff on the internet.
Right.
And with all the information that's out on the internet, I think it's really becoming more and more difficult to source, I guess, correct information, if you could say, like, accurate information. Like, how do you see, like, the internet in terms of, like, truthfulness? Like, how would you, if I go onto the internet, is everything on the internet 100% truth?
No. I think you have to check everything, you know. Don't just believe it because it's on the internet. You know, you can check it out. And there's probably a lot of BS on the internet, yeah. Right. But you can research it pretty effectively to see if stuff is true or not, you know.
Yeah, and I think we've seen a lot in the news recently about, you know, information manipulation, propaganda, those kinds of things. We've been talking about recently, even over the last couple of days, we've been talking about the Internet Research Agency, you know, the Russian-funded troll farm, internet troll farms, funded out of places like, Eastern Russia and Ukraine. Right. Who do you think right now? I think part of one of the questions is to talk about media manipulation. Who do you think controls? Do you think there's an overarching
Over the media?
Yeah, like over the internet. Like who controls that information? Who do you think has the most influence over the information that we see now?
In the mainstream media, I think it might be the Council on Foreign Relations is a very powerful think tank. And ever since the 1920s, the most important media outlets have been controlled by people from the Council on Foreign Relations. These are the guys who want a big brother government. And also the CIA has a lot of influence over the mainstream media. And, you know, that was proven. There was a church committee investigation back in the 70s. And they found out that the CIA has so much influence over the media. And a lot of people are being manipulated by the CIA. So I think it's the CFR and the CIA, in my opinion.
Okay. And those are the biggest players on like manipulating mass media to push the masses in the direction that's desired for them.
I also heard 90% of journalists are leftists, you know, so it seems like it might be a globalist leftist agenda also.
Like you don't, yeah.
So the CIA and Council on Foreign Relations have a lot of influence over that. But I interviewed Noam Chomsky about that. You know, he's a famous, very famous professor.
Yep.
He doesn't believe it's a conspiracy. He believes, you know, there's only six corporations that own the media, basically. And so it's always going to protect the interests of the big corporations. And the interests of the corporations are the same interests of the government. That's how he sees it. Well, I tried to convince him on CIA and Council on Foreign Relations also.
Right.
Now, I know you said you believe the CIA has a lot of influence and stuff. What about now with Russia and that? Do you think there's a lot of meddling from outside countries? Because this is such a powerful tool to influence people that other countries are beginning to use it maybe as efficiently as the CIA has historically used it on.
Oh, perhaps, you know, I don't know absolutely everything about it, but I personally think that all this Russia stuff is probably propaganda and nonsense that they're trying to destroy Trump, because Trump is anti-establishment. He's anti-Washington establishment. So I don't think he colluded with Russia. So I think that's propaganda coming from CIA and Council on Foreign Relations. I don't know how much influence foreign countries might have in the media, but I think a lot of this Russian influence is propaganda nonsense to try to destroy Trump.
Well, not so much. I'm not talking like mainstream media in the United States, say like, you know, CNN and stuff like that. But even if you just think about targeted ads on Facebook and stuff, because those can be bought from anywhere, any person with really no record of who's buying what and for when and for who. And you can target these ads. So
Facebook and Twitter and Google, they're all influenced by globalist leftists, it seems. You know, if you go on there and you try to support Trump, if you try to talk about conspiracies, then they'll try to destroy your account there. They'll kick you off Facebook, kick you off Twitter, you know. I think it's a conspiracy to have a one-world government, a big brother government, and the Illuminati is behind it all. You know, you guys know the Illuminati?
Yeah, it's very popular term amongst theorists nowadays.
They want to have a big brother world government, so that's sort of socialist, leftist, globalist stuff. So they're going to, they don't want nationalists. They don't want, conservatives, because that's supporting individual governments over globalism. So they all seem to be influenced by the left.
Right.
Right. So who do you, if the left or these corporations are taking too much, you know, they're putting too much influence over our media consumption and the media that we're exposed to. Like, who do you think should control the access to information, or what information would be deemed, you know, credible or correct?
Well, I guess, you know, just individuals like yourself, you know, guys who aren't dependent on corporations for ads. They don't have Council on Foreign Relations or CIA people controlling or running their media outlet. You know, that's why the internet is so good, because it's a free and open exchange of ideas. It's not being controlled by a small amount of corporations. It's not being controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations or the CIA.
Not so yet.
Individuals like you guys, you know?
Right. Yeah, the internet's not being controlled, not quite yet, at least.
Yeah.
I'm sure people are trying. I'm sure people are trying to lock it down for their own
their
own means. But so far, still so good. I mean, as podcasters, like we have the opportunity to have an unfiltered avenue of exchange of information on the internet, which is something that you can't have in the mainstream news, especially like even if you look at like presidential debates on huge, giant topics, they give them 30 seconds to try and debate a topic that could take a week to really get your point across. So I think, like podcast format is definitely a accelerator of thought, in my opinion.
Yes. And that's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Right on.
A really good, I was reading your one interview about, the JFK assassination. I really was into that one. We want to get in that a bit. How was that a big one for you growing up? And Is that what kind of got you down the rabbit hole?
Well, I think I went down the rabbit hole when I started receiving like alternative newspapers in 1979. But, you know, that is a big conspiracy, I guess. That's really, what's the word, very intriguing, you know, all the Kennedy information. I interviewed for my book a guy who was one of Lyndon Johnson's lawyers who says that Lyndon Johnson was the mastermind of Kennedy's assassination. I don't believe that. I believe he was part of it. But I believe there's more than military industrial complex in the CIA.
Yeah,
but I think Lyndon Johnson was a part of it. I think he was. He was a very crooked guy. He was a lot more crooked than people realize. Right. And I think he was a part of it.
Well, and he really was left with the most to gain in that situation.
Yes. Yeah, really.
Yeah. To become president and then take the war in Vietnam, the next step, and all the rest that goes along with that.
Yes, he's maybe going to go to prison. He was engaged in a bunch of crooked business dealings, and there was a good chance he's going to go to prison. But of course, when Kennedy got killed, he stopped the investigation into that.
Right. It's convenient.
Yeah.
Then he got lucky enough to deal with all the fallout from the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Lucky him.
It was, it was really interesting. I liked the part of the interview where you dug into LBJ's going to a psychiatrist and the concern they had with keeping that information, what was ever said to them, from ever seeming to come out. I mean, which would obviously have some doctor-patient relationships.
There'd be
and stuff,
some privilege there, right?
But it seemed like they took a little bit of an over-interest in assuring that information was kept privy.
Yeah, really, because after he got out of office, he was in a deep depression, LBJ. I think he lived to like 1973 or something from got out of office in 68. He was in a deep depression. He went to see a psychiatrist, and this guy I interviewed, his lawyer, said that he probably engaged in a number of murders. Maybe he confessed. You know, maybe that's how he got out of his depression. Because down in Texas is a mean place where they use the gun a lot, you know, to it was common practice to eliminate your political enemies.
Right. So, the Wild West.
Yes. Yeah. Did I go like this?
Yosemite Sam going on. It was fascinating. I didn't know a lot about that, the Texas stuff, and there was deep-seated corruption going on there before his term in office. So it was kind of interesting to see that follow-up from the time in Texas to the connecting it to those shady past, kind of following him into the office of the White House. I found that very interesting.
He took a lot of money under the table, Lyndon Johnson, and that was another reason that he had to get rid of Kennedy. And maybe Kennedy wasn't going to use him as his vice president when he ran in 1964. He's probably going to kick him off the ticket. So that's another reason that he...
Right.
I think it shows you how corrupt politicians can be. That's, you know, God knows what these guys do. Like George Bush, he's the head of the CIA.
Right. So in your opinion, what do you think what happened to Kennedy? Was it a group effort, or was it a lone shooter, or what do you think? What do you think happened?
No, I don't think it was a lone shooter. I think it's a lesson. If you go against the political establishment, go against the military industrial complex, go against the CIA, Kennedy wasn't listening to these. The CIA and the military industrial complex want to run the president. And so Kennedy, he was maybe pulling out of Vietnam. He didn't go attack at the Bay of Pigs. He didn't go attack during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that's what these guys wanted. So, plus he fired Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA. That's like firing, a mafia, Carl Gambino, you know, this guy's an assassin. So, and then, you know, a couple of months before the assassination, Lyndon Johnson met with Alan Dulles on his ranch. And he always kept a diary, Lyndon Johnson. But on the few days that he met with Alan Dulles, about 2 months before the assassination, he didn't write anything in his diary. So I think something's going on there.
Yeah, for sure.
Alan Dulles was a big character, one of the founding members of the CIA. Alan Dulles was pretty much like when they originally built the CIA. I know Braden and me talked about at one point, we talked about Operation Gladio, and pretty much the formation of the CIA, which was pretty much a business venture between a lot of capitalists, a lot of just really rich, influential people built an intelligence service, which was based off the infrastructure that was left behind by the German SS.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I think the big businessmen want to control everything. They wanted a way to have an agency in which they could control, and they didn't need congressional approval or presidential approval to do whatever they wanted. They want to be the real shadow government that controlled things. I think it's still that way today, and they're using all their influence to try to destroy Trump in the media because they already shot Kennedy, so they can't do that again. It would be uncouth, I think. So trying to assassinate him in the media, I think.
There'd be too many camera angles nowadays.
Yeah.
Way too many.
Yeah,
too many
camera film would be way better.
Yeah.
Too many camera phones.
It'd be in 4K ultra slow motion everywhere nowadays.
Yeah. They'd probably make a music video out of it or something nowadays.
One of those TikTok videos.
Yeah. You see it posts on Instagram about 5 seconds after it happened.
Yeah. It'd be live streamed.
Yeah.
it's definitely interesting book. The other part I loved is we started getting into that. I think I knew it before, but I had forgotten when I read the chapter about the JFK, was that they had actually found a fingerprint matching Mac Wallace on rifle.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
They found it in the Texas School Book Depository.
Yes, in the Texas School Book Depository, which is a huge red herring there, because that guy was into some shady shit back in the day. So reading that in your book kind of refreshed my memory, and I was like, oh, yeah, that – I was like, this is that's such a – interesting case because of all this shit that went on there.
So much intrigue to the Kennedy assassination, who was there, what mafia members, what military guys were there. You know, you can read up on that and read about it forever. I think so much intrigue to it.
So Doug, I got another question for you. So for someone just jumping off or maybe just finding themselves in getting involved in conspiracies and looking them up and having some fun with them, what do you think is a really good jumping off point for people getting on board, or what do you think is a good one for people to look into that's got some substance and can get them going down the rabbit hole?
I think maybe my book. I don't know.
Plug the book. Yeah, there it is.
Nice. All American the way through, word for word.
And cover-ups.
Yeah.
A number of people have told me that they feel my book is a good introduction to conspiracy theories. I don't go that deep, but I go deep enough. But also for somebody who doesn't know about the different conspiracies, I think my book is good. What else is good? Maybe Jim Marsh's books. He's very good.
What about some certain cases or specific conspiracy? What's your favorite one?
Is simply I interviewed G. Edward Griffin about the Federal Reserve, and he's a foremost expert on the idea that the Federal Reserve should be abolished.
Yeah.
And so it's the banking system itself that wants to control the world, the bankers. And every government borrows money from big banks. They charge too much interest, and there's going to be too much interest and debt, and they release too much money, and that's going to cause inflation. And the way to cure that is what the founding fathers wanted, which was for every government to issue its own money to stop being a slave to these big banks.
Yeah.
That's what Jim Marsh believes, and G. Edward Griffin. If a government issued its own money in proper proportion, we wouldn't have debt, we wouldn't have inflation, and we could have a happy economy and a happy society. Maybe Trump will do something about it because he's always criticizing the Federal Reserve. I think, Trump, he has a lot of good instincts. I think if we keep electing presidents who aren't professional politicians like Trump, then we maybe have a chance. I hope they have a nicer personality than Trump. I don't know about his personality.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is nice to have a politician in office who has not been lifelong in the pockets of these people, regardless of doesn't have to be Trump, just someone who realizes that the Federal Reserve is actually just printing their own money and enslaving not just America and Canada, but pretty much the whole Western world. What's the world debt now to the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank? Trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars.
Well, just the U.S. government is $22 trillion in debt. To the World Bank, it must be. But this is, the conspiracy theories is these bankers are the ones who want to control the world. They want to bankrupt the world and push everybody into United Nations concentration camps. And if we're going to continue going into debt and inflation, then they might pull it off. But if governments start issuing their own money, off the gold standard, on the gold standard, and then we can be free from that conspiracy.
Yeah, it's currently at $22.9 trillion.
That's the American.
That's just debt. The American.
Wow.
The second highest is China at $9.7 trillion. But that's, you know, that's a distant second.
It's a weird system to have your government borrow money from a private bank at interest. So no matter what you do, you can never actually climb back out of debt. It's actually it's a genius system put on by the bank.
Like, yeah, it's the best marketing.
It's the best form of enslavement because everyone's just trying to work for each other and live a happy life. And the controlling body of the one thing we all trade for that happiness is controlled, like, by private people, by private interest. It's a crazy system. And every, like, Western country has us, maybe not quite as private or maybe as corrupt as a Federal Reserve, but all Western countries have that central bank, and we're all continually going in debt. Like, Canada's, it's pretty much the same up here. We just have a way less like debt ratio. We're way less in debt, but still have massive debt and every year goes up by $5-10 billion.
Yeah, I'll tell you what Canada's is right now. Canada's debt is $1.8 trillion.
It's bananas, man.
Peanuts. Yeah.
Well, I think if everyone had to pay, everyone have to pay like fucking like $40,000 to pay that back. Which we can never do. And then if everyone went to the bank to get their money out, they don't have the money to give out anyway. Like, you can never get all your cash out of the bank because it doesn't really exist.
Yeah, it's all make believe. It's all monopoly money in the.
It's all invested back in the market at a fraction of they got.
We don't even hide it here. Ours is the same colors, monopoly money too.
Yes, yeah, true.
We've embraced it here in Canada.
Yeah, you got all the colors.
It's worth just as much too, so that's good.
Yeah, it's one of those crazy systems where it's only powerful because we've given it the power.
Well, everyone agrees on the system of trade, and if your government, that's the system of trade, you can't. I mean, I'm sure there's probably a law like you cannot make your own currency. Like, if we created our own currency to trade with each other, it would be illegal. We'd probably go to jail.
Got a ban on trading goats. More of that.
Yeah.
Here, I want to jump in for a second.
Let's go. What's next?
So, I was doing a quick read over about all the experts that you interviewed and stuff like that, and I got pretty excited because I recognized Dr. Moss's name. I had a family member who was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and basically got, you know, okay, we can do chemo, we can do radiation, and we can hopefully prolong her life. You know what I mean? Me being somewhat in the medical field, thought, okay, maybe I can do some research and find out some alternatives. And the first thing that came up when I did any type of alternative reading for cancer treatment was high dose vitamin C intravenous. Now, when I tried to bring that up to the oncologist, I got laughed out of the room, right? Because that's not common practice. That's not a thing we do. But, you know, as soon as you go in and look in any type of alternative treatments for cancer, it's high dose vitamin C. And to see here that you have a whole chapter on the suppression of Dr. Pauling and his, you know, his research into high dose vitamin C, man, like, that to me is just, that's got to be one of the biggest conspiracies out there possible.
About the treatment for cancers and stuff.
Yeah, well, and just the proven track record that high dose vitamin C has. Like, we were buying it from Mexico, and I was starting intravenouses on my mom with it because we couldn't get it here
because it just was not. Hasn't gone clinical trials or whatever they say. Oh,
the
right?
Doug can elaborate on it more than I can, but it got completely shit on by the Mayo Clinic, right?
Yes, it did. It's like, actually, the guy who advocated that was a guy named Dr. Linus Pauling, who won the Nobel Prize for chemistry, and he felt high doses of vitamin C can help cancer patients. But at times when he tried to get it tested at the Mayo Clinic, they actually flubbed the test on purpose. They did the test wrong on purpose, so it didn't work. And then Linus Pauling, he also won the Nobel Peace Prize. He won two Nobel Prizes. He said everyone should know that the war on cancer is largely a fraud. And so it's happened a lot of other times, different positive treatments for cancer that get totally suppressed by the medical establishment. I mean, if you believe the Illuminati is in control, then they want us to be sick and a lot less people so they can put us all in concentration camps and control us. It's just a money-making thing, too. They're making so much money selling chemotherapy that they don't want anything to break up those profits. shots.
Well, Doug, we've talked about, we've had a couple case files on Big Pharma and stuff, and we've talked about the realistic that if there's a market to sell people these drugs, then there's a market to keep people just sick enough that they need to continue to buy these drugs. Because if a drug makes someone, cures someone, then they're out of a market.
Well, it is, as a business, like these giant corporations make their money off selling these drugs as a business, like they're like publicly traded. Many of these companies, it makes no sense for them to try and sell less drugs.
Well, there's no money in prevention and curing.
No,
it's treating. All the money is in treating, right? Like, tell me why.
Huge industry.
We're dumping all this money into cancer research and we're still using the exact same technique as we came up with in the 1940s. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the only thing that's really changed is targeted radiation. But chemotherapy is still the same shit.
Yeah, it's like,
it's poison.
Kill everything and hopefully you get the cancer?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
I interviewed Dr. Ralph Morse about that. He's like maybe the leading authority on alternative treatments for cancer. So I think it's a good interview in my book there. He knows a lot about it.
Yeah, I read his book, Questioning Chemotherapy. I bought it.
He doesn't believe it's a conspiracy. It's believed that it's just a matter of they have to make money. And the way that everybody's dependent on making money now is through chemotherapy. So other people think that they, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is connected to the big bankers and they position their people to make sure no cures come through because they want to control the world and make a lot of money. So I don't know if it's a conspiracy or it's just a faulty system.
Yeah, definitely. The system's definitely got fault. Like healthcare for profit doesn't really seem like a humane way to go about it, really. Keep people sick.
Yeah. Does universal healthcare work in Canada?
Well, I mean, you could say it works and you could say it doesn't. I mean, it works well. I mean, it works. If you're sick, you're going to get help.
I'll weigh in on that. If I blew my knee out a couple of years ago and that was all paid for to get fixed. I was completely covered and I don't make enough money. And I definitely didn't make enough money at the time to have afforded that as a private surgery. I couldn't have done it. I would have had to walk around with a bum knee.
Right.
Because if I didn't have insurance or something, I couldn't have paid the cost to have that surgery done privately. So that was completely covered by universal healthcare. There was a little bit of a wait, but I mean, at the end of the day, I didn't pay for nothing.
No, I mean, you pay in every month to the system. And the only problem with having, I think, universal healthcare is some people will abuse and they'll go to the doctor for, I mean, Andrew could attest to that people will call or go to the doctor for stuff that you should probably stay home and just wait a few days.
Weather the storm.
And I think it's that knowing that, oh, it's like we've already paid for it. It's free. We should just go. That kind of like puts a lot of strain on the system and in some cases can increase wait times in emergency rooms and stuff. But
well, and that's like put it in perspective, wait times in emergency room. You go into Vancouver General Hospital, which is one of the bigger cities in British Columbia. And on an average night, you're waiting 4.5 hours to see a doctor. And that's if your life's not in danger. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if you're going in and just seeking any,
if you need some minor stitches, you're getting put to the back of the line.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And like you look right at the hospitals and clinics and stuff like that, like you compare them to the private clinics in the States and they look like just like crack shacks. It's hilarious.
But the thing is though, I always attribute it. It's not like I don't need the medicine all the time. I don't need to go to the hospital all the time. It's been there when I need it. And there's people out there that aren't nearly as fortunate as me. And to be in the situation I'm in and they need it and they shouldn't have to worry about that. They shouldn't have to be like, is this going to cost me my entire savings to get fixed? But is it a perfect system? No, but it's like, there it's definitely a system.
There's probably no such thing as a perfect system, but yeah, it's I don't want universal access to medication though, because I think that leads to a little bit of influence from Big Pharma to, you know, if it's free for Canadians or it's included, then I think you'd see a lot more people taking OxyContin and the rest of those drugs if that was included under universal healthcare. But
there's $1.8 trillion in debt, though. I don't know.
Well, better than 22. And we got access to healthcare.
Yeah.
We can pay that back eventually.
How many people even got it?
less than that live in California. Yeah. 32 million, I think, is the running total.
That might be a little more, but it's hard to tell.
32, 33.
Not a ton for a large nation.
But we had a little bit of an influx when Trump got voted in.
Yeah, we had the Google search results went way up for Canadian immigration.
We're building an ice wall.
Ice wall up here.
Trump in Canada generally.
I'd say generally he's probably not well.
He's not well received.
Well received. We'll leave it at that, I think.
I'll say I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of him. I wasn't a big fan when he was a celebrity.
I didn't exactly.
And I was like, I'm not a big fan of him now. I was like, just release your tax returns. Like, what's to hide? I was like, he's always saying something ridiculous. I'm like, it's exactly what everyone wants. It's a circus show right now, right? You got he's always in the headlines. The news just loves him. You know, some people say he's just baiting them. Some people say he's trolling them. Some people think he's stupid. Whatever it is, I was like, it's not good for anyone. The circus that's going on right now is not good for either side, I believe. But again, we're a long way removed from your guys' political
system.
Yeah,
we're not a very political show either. We don't really, I mean, Dan follows the most by far up here.
But. You know, I'm sort of something that we need, not a professional politician, you know, for all, you know, most politicians are put in there by the same cabal of think tanks like the Council on Foreign Relations and Wall Street. And so Trump's a part of that. You know, the economy in America is better than it's been in 50 years. Employment is better than it's been in 50 years. So in a way, he's going against the political establishment and fixing things for the people as much as an idiot and an asshole his personality is, you know?
Yeah, I still think it, for me, I'm like, yeah, if there's probably pros and cons, and I'm sure everyone could write a list. I just think it doesn't matter. I was like, we're getting into this era of where celebrity and being popular is the reason you're getting elected. I don't think that should be a thing. I was like, you shouldn't be able to levy your popularity from reality TV and running your dad's businesses and turn that into a successful campaign where you're running the most powerful country in the world. Like, I get it. I get it. It's a popular vote and stuff. But it was like, it would be refreshing to see people who didn't want it get it. Like, it's just a very interesting thing for me, a very interesting politics in general, that's how they work. It's a popularity contest.
The reason he got in is he's exposing the conspiracies, you know? Like he said that Obama might not be a natural citizen. That's initially got him really popular. And I think that might be true. And he's a product of Alex Jones, and I think Alex Jones is a populist, and I think a lot of the conspiracy theories are right. What do you guys think of Alex Jones?
I think he's a great secondary character on Joe Rogan.
Oh yeah. My God, that was amazing.
he gets a little too...
He acts like a crazy man.
Yeah, he gets a little too crazy, and he gets way too into it, and instead of giving the information out that is needed in a, like a, this is the information.
Clear and concise.
Here's the facts. Here's where you can look yourself. He just like 3 o'clock, three coke fueled rants. I'm not saying he does drugs, but I'm like, that's what I appear. I'm like, this is like, it's hard to listen to him sometimes.
I mean, he obviously knows a ton of what he's into. Like, if you listen to him talk, he can spout idea after idea for like 4 hours straight without stopping, which is very impressive. He just never really explains. It doesn't explain it very well to me. Like,
I know, starts acting crazy. I don't know why he starts acting like a lunatic. I don't know why he does that, but I think he knows. He's pretty smart about it.
I think I know why he does it. I was like, it gets him ratings and people come into the thing. I was like, if I did that once and we got way more views, I'd probably keep doing it.
Yeah, but he, like, at the beginning, he was into some credible stuff, like with Bohemian Grove and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, I'm a conspiracy theorist, so I think he knows a lot about a lot of important stuff, like just the fact that there's this agenda to have a big brother government. I mean, I think that the main thing that Alex Jones is warning us about, as crazy as he acts like a nut. I don't know why he acts that way, but I think his politics are right, because, you know, the main conspiracy is that We're eventually going to have to all move into United Nations concentration camps, because otherwise global warming is going to kill us all. And this is what is the main political force behind the world, really, because the big banks and the Council on Foreign Relations control everything, and that's what eventually they want to have. And I think Alex Jones is against that, as nutty as he acts. And I think Donald Trump is against that, as big a jerk as he can be also.
Here's the thing with when, as soon as you start to get that big in this kind of space, in like a conspiracy space, I'm sure there's, for every one person that wants to leak information to you, there's nine people leaking bullshit information and false information to you. So I can imagine it gets very hard to wade through what's true and what's not. And that's my issue with when these shows on conspiracy, and we fucking love conspiracies here, but that's my biggest issue, is I'm like, when people are going to these people and giving them this information, I'm like, these people are also huge targets for misinformation.
Yeah.
Because if you want a conspiracy theorist to go on something, you give him some information, he gives it to all his people. Next thing you know, they're preaching it like gospel, right? It can be a tool for both sides. And I'm not saying that he's wrong about everything. I'm just saying it'd be very easy to give someone just enough leads to run with it, especially a guy like that. And he's got such a huge global audience now.
I think he's pretty good at determining what's true and what's not true, as nutty as he acts. But, and also, I interviewed Jim Mars about the New World Order and the Big Brother government. Jim Mars was like the most famous conspiracy theory author in the world. He died in August 2017. And so, you know, the proof that there's this conspiracy to have a world government is the Agenda 21 plan of the United Nations. They say eventually global warming is going to get so bad, we have to move into United Nations facilities, be controlled by the UN police force, not use cars, not use air conditioning.
Well,
I personally think global warming might be nonsense to get us to accept the Agenda 21. Jim Mars thought that also. And I think this is the main thing that Alex Jones is warning us against. As nutty as he acts, I think he's got a lot of stuff right.
Where would these... Like, I've heard this conspiracy before, like the Agenda 21 and the camp. What do people think are these going to be, these concentration camps? Are they going to be like purpose-built cities? Are they going to like retrofit metropolis areas to house people in a giant wall? Or what's the conspiracy there?
I think they're already building them. Building United Nations concentration camps. And, I guess the big theory of conspiracy theorists is that eventually the economy is going to go so bad that we're going to have a depression worse than the 1930s, and then we're all going to have to move into these United Nations living facilities, and that's going to lead to Big Brother on the world government. But I think they're already building these facilities around in different cities. And, you can go on the UN's website and you can read about Agenda 21. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a plan that they have.
So for them to purposely crash the economy and stuff, is this going to be after? Is this now the high point, since the U.S.'s economy has been better than it has in 50 years? Are we at like the high point, and then it's going to come crashing down?
Well, it's better because Trump is in office and he's doing the right thing. Trump is not a part of the establishment. So he is fixing it so jobs are coming back to America. So that's why the economy is good. The establishment, the New World Order, is no longer in control. Trump is in control as much as an idiot his personality is. And he's fixing the economy.
So saying he does get reelected, that's another 4 years. Will they just wait it out?
Well, they're trying to impeach him. They're trying to get rid of him in any way they can. I don't think they could shoot him in the street, because they already did that to the Kennedys, it'd be uncouth.
So is Trump going to pull like a coup or something and then stay in to fight the New World Order? Is like, what do you think is going to happen ideally? Like, what would be ideal setup for him to combat the UN's agenda?
The idea would be that he gets to stay in office, and he made that great speech at the UN recently about how, the future is for patriots, not for globalists. It was a really great speech. The media doesn't give him enough credit. And so, if he can stay in and do the things he's doing, he's trying to take power away from the you know, the free trade agreements that allow corporations to move overseas. So all the jobs go overseas. He's trying to say we're not going to be part of the United Nations. I hope he can stay in for another 4 years, and I hope we can elect more anti-globalists like him and hopefully defeat the New World Order. I hope the next guy who comes in isn't as much has a stupid personality as Trump. He acts like a seventh grade bully. He insults people, you know. I hope the next guy has a better personality.
Now, I'm just going to jump into one thing, and it's just a sticking point for me, and we can all disagree. That's the great thing about conspiracies and stuff. The one thing I disagree with, because I've seen the change with my own eyes, is when people say that they think the global warming or just climate change is not real and maybe it's being fabricated. The ocean is acidifying so fast that it's killing coral reef. And I've dived at like world famous dive sites in Thailand, and I've been back to those same dive sites 5 years later, and they're barren wastelands. All the once thriving coral is gone. The Great Barrier Reef is disappearing at the craziest rate it's ever been before because of ocean acidification.
And ocean temperature too.
And if it gets to a boiling point, it's going to destroy all the whole ocean.
Well, you're talking about a total habitat. You're talking about a total ecosystem collapse.
Yeah, right? and that any big extinction level event we've ever seen has been involved with the oceans dying. And we're seeing that at an alarming rate right now. And I've seen it with my own eyes.
Is it enough that it's going to kill us all? I don't know.
Well, here's the thing is like plankton is the biggest source of our oxygen. People say the Amazon's the lungs of the earth, but it's the ocean. The oceans are the lungs. That's where we get the most oxygen.
Yeah.
So if we kill the ocean, not only do we kill, soon everything will follow that. Because think about how much we sustain ourselves with fish. And even if we just wipe out plankton, the amount of stuff in the ocean that lives off plankton is everything. And the amount of bears, like
you could follow it all the way up.
You would follow everything. Everything, if the ocean goes, and I think everything follows.
Yeah.
And we're just seeing it with overfishing and that. So when people say like, oh, climate change, I don't think it's real. It's like, well, we can track it. You can see it tracked. You can go and look at pictures of the same shots of coral reef where it was once thriving and now it's completely calcified.
Dude, if we say human-caused CO2 emissions from fossil fuels is not related to anything to do with climate change, just throw it out. Humans interfering in the natural balance of the world is that's way more devastating, I think. Like, we're not only just adding a bunch of shit to the atmosphere, we're actually just taking away the living planet. Like, we're taking the balance off. So even if you were to say, like, we have no change in the global warming or the climate change, you can easily, like, undoubtedly say we are, like, destroying whole ecosystems with the use of our technology. Like, that's, I don't think that's too far out of the question.
There are a lot of scientists, very respected scientists, who say, you know, the world isn't going to end. But, you know, there's something to what you're saying that's true. Doing some stuff, you know. Well, but maybe you should be open-minded. They should look into both sides of the argument.
But here's the thing. I don't think the world's going to end
either. The
world's
not an end, no.
But how we're living right now in this realm of, you know, of just whatever you want you can have would change drastically. And I think it would be a very difficult world to live in if we wipe out that amount of living creatures on this earth.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slow build. Like, they've been saying it since the 70s. Like, in our lifetime, maybe we won't see much, but in the next, you know, 5-6 generations, a lot of people, you can't really see that far. So it's kind of hard. I like to err on the side of caution when it comes to this.
That's exactly right. Because I'm like, if we turn green and these people who, you know, are called alarmists and stuff, if we go with them, we have green energy and maybe we're wrong about climate change. Well, okay, well, we switched to green energy. We have now renewable energy. But if we don't listen to them at all, if we just ignore them and say, no, that's all bullshit, then it's either we're wrong or we're dead.
it's a very complicated thing, and none of us are real climate scientists, so it's kind of hard to really go with it. Andrew, you wanted to say something there or what? Hmm? Well, I thought you
were. I was covering a yawn.
Oh, he's covering a yawn. Okay, I want to ask you something. This one of this is the thing that really got me down the rabbit hole, and that's the events surrounding September 11th, 2001. What is your take? Give us a summary. What do you think? What happened? Like, what really went down? Was there foreknowledge? Did they know? Did the government actually take part? What happened?
I think they probably knew. The neocons that controlling the Bush White House. I interviewed David Roy Griffin about that for my book, and he's like the foremost expert on that. He's written like 10 books. I think he sold 200,000 copies. It might be one of his last interviews because he's like 83 years old. He broke his hip, so I don't know if he's going to do any more interviews. But, you know, I think they knew about it because they need a reason to take over the Middle East. They want to take over the Middle East. They want the neocons want military control. And so it might be also they need to protect Israel over there, too. But, you know, a lot of people would say that, you know, if you think 9/11 was an inside job, you're crazy or irrational. But some of the most foremost experts on military, high-ranking military officials, CIA officials, they believe 9/11 was an inside job. If you go to, what's that website? PatriotsQuestion911.com, you can see so many high-ranking generals, CIA officials think that it was an inside job. So, you know, very well could have been, you know?
We actually had Mike Berger on of 9/11 Truth. We do a September 11th show every year. It's a really good one. That one, because that happened in my lifetime, and it was
one of those world-changing event.
World-changing event. And very interesting to see. I definitely agree it was a way for them to get into the Middle East. We've always got into the, did they know it was going to happen and not act, or did they put the pieces in place so it would kind of fall apart that way? As in, did they know that Al-Qaeda was infiltrating and they didn't act, or they had enough misinformation going around that they couldn't act? Because it seems with everything we've done and the people we've interviewed and stuff, it seems like they had an idea that they wanted to do this
for a while. People knew something.
They wanted to they were even planning they were doing the training missions that day, same day of the hijacked airliners being flown into buildings.
Oh, and they had plans for the new American century before September 11th that said like they're going to invade 7 countries within 12 years in the Middle East. Like that was all done before the events. So it's that's why it's so easy to make the jump that this was a pre-orchestrated, coordinated like event to infiltrate an entire region of the earth you got to say some people call it like a holy war or some people just call it a resource war. Either way, it seemed like people knew before. They had written about it. The Patriot Act was already, it must have been already written because it came out so quickly after and it passed so quick. Like it seemed like a very coordinated effort.
There was a paper, you guys probably know this, written by one of the neocon think tanks. They said, we want to take control of the Middle East. We want to remove Saddam Hussein. And the only way we can do that is if there's another Pearl Harbor. That's what it said in the paper. And so many of the guys who worked in the Bush White House signed that paper, you know? It's almost like a smoking gun there, you know?
It's funny now because, I mean, Bush, the amount of heat Bush was taking during his time, and I was like, I think we can all agree that, like, Cheney was running a lot more of the show than I think anyone knew.
Yeah.
it's tough to say, but that what we always love that conspiracy. I mean, we talk about it every year.
Now,
on the morning of 9/11, when the planes already hit the World Trade Center, and they knew another plane was heading towards the Pentagon, and some aide of Cheney's came down to the bottom of the White House, kept telling him the plane's getting closer, the plane's getting closer. And he goes, do the orders still stand? And Cheney turned around and yelled at him, yes, the orders still stand. He was apparently telling him not to shoot down the plane. Did you guys hear about that?
Yeah, I think Mike Berger talked about that. Actually. Yeah. I think we actually played the clip on the podcast about that.
Wow.
Yeah, that wasn't mentioned by the 9/11 Commission, which was run by a guy who worked for Bush, the 9/11 Commission.
They never mentioned Trade Center Building 7 really either in that, a whole another thing, right?
Let's
And that's for me, because I don't know if you're familiar with that, the study that just came out of University of Fairbanks, Alaska, about them analyzing the actual collapse of the tower and pitting it against the NIST report. And if you watch the NIST video of the collapse of the tower, the rendering of their model, it shows the building like collapse and fall, and it pulls one wall over on itself and it all falls to the side. But then if you put that to the actual video of the collapse, it doesn't even match up. So then this report came out and said, like, there's no way it could have happened how NIST said it unless like 14 columns, not just one, failed at the same time. So it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, some of the most prestigious architects and engineers say that it couldn't have happened the way the government said. There had to be bombs inside the building. Plus, plenty of people said they heard bombs. Plus, one professor found thermite, which is the chemical in bombs there. It's like so obvious what happened, it seems.
They found thermite, but they actually think it was like a nanothermite, like a military grade thermite or thermate, something way more explosive and incendiary than just normal like thermite. But either way, like the events of that day are just, it's insane. It's crazy. And I can never, no matter how much I've tried to, I just try to go down the debunking train on myself and be like, man, you're a nut. You're a nut for thinking this stuff. And every time I look, I'm like, well, I can't. Some stuff I'm like, okay, well, I could be wrong about that. But what about this? Is it so blatantly, obviously not the right story? How can you go about it?
Yeah, my book, my first interview was about the first Pearl Harbor. That's my first interview about the evidence that Franklin Roosevelt knew Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked. And then as it happened, my last interview was about the evidence that Bush and that administration knew or arranged for 9/11 to happen. I didn't plan it that way, but that's how my book ended up there.
All right. I got one more question. You know, Donald Trump, when he came in, he said he was going to release a lot of the JFK documents. He kind of took a quick 180, released a whole bunch of redacted documents, and then said that for national security, a lot couldn't be released. If he's that involved with conspiracies, do you think what's in those reports could hurt America that bad that even him, who's a supporter, a said supporter of, you know, the conspiracy world, couldn't release that because it was going to be that damning?
Was it his decision not to release them?
Well, he announced it, so unless it wasn't his decision, he sure made it seem like his.
Well, you know, I don't know why he would have done that. Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm not sure. I don't know how to answer it.
And everything else he released was heavily, heavily redacted. So it wasn't quite the release we were all hoping for at the time.
Not all the people are dead yet.
That's very true.
when they all pass, then it'll be unredacted. Is that a word? Unredacted?
Yeah. Well, sure.
Unredacted. They'll unredact it. It is now. We're approaching an hour, so any more questions we want to ask?
Doug, why don't you pump where people can buy your book, where they can find more information about you, and more importantly, are you working on what's next? What are you working on next?
Well, I might do American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups Volume 2. You know, do some more interviews. I'm thinking about that. My website is AmericanConspiriesAndCoverUps.com, and you got to put a slash between cover and ups. And I got some excerpts from the book there. I got some really good pictures of everybody I interviewed. Oh, there we go. And then I got some links right to my Amazon page. I think it's a good website. It's a fun website. But I just want to know, is the guy from Virginia, is he part of the Illuminati? He's wearing an Illuminati symbol on his hat.
That's actually our podcast symbol.
That's our podcast logo.
It's a little, from there, it's a little alien abducting a man, but from your vantage point, it probably looks just like a triangle, but it's not. It's not Illuminati. Close, but not.
Part of the conspiracy. Good. Yeah.
So thanks again, Doug. Doug was nice enough to give us a copy of his book to raffle off for all of our fans. So if you are a $10 supporter or higher, next month we're starting a raffle. So you are going to get a copy of American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups and a limited edition Alien Theorists Theorizing hoodie.
Whoa. If you win the raffle.
If you win the raffle in the $10 category or more on Patreon, you can find Doug's book on Amazon. Doug, you got any social media or anything?
Twitter, US conspiracies. That's it. US/conspiracy. Yeah, I got a good Twitter page. I'm trying to set up Instagram and Facebook. You guys on Instagram?
You got a Facebook here. I found your Facebook.
Yeah,
we got there. It is.
I haven't been working it. I gotta work it.
Work it more.
You can go shoot Doug questions there. Doug, thanks again for coming on. Thanks again for sending us a book. We loved it. We were perusing it all week. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, as you said, it's a great introduction to if you've never looked into any conspiracies, even if you are hard-nosed and you said, I'm never going to believe nothing, it's good to read all the stuff because you've interviewed the people who've actually put in the work. You've interviewed all the people from all the different walks of conspiracies. And I think it's a really good summary, even if just a little teaser, if you've never read them before, I think it's a highly recommended.
It's the interview, so they read fast. You know, I think it's fun to read. Yeah. Laborious reading. All right, thanks a lot, guys. It's great.
Yeah, thanks, brother. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
Keep fighting. All right. How do we?
You want to go straight into some after hours?
Well, let's. All right. Can
I send you an email sometime? I got to ask you something.
Yeah, send us an email anytime.
You can ask us now. We're off.
We're still on.
Oh, are we? Oh.
But no. Do you guys know Donald Jeffries? He's like one of the most famous conspiracy theory authors. I was wondering if maybe you want to interview him. He's sort of a friend of mine. Maybe I'll send you an email.
Yeah, sure. Send Donald us an email. We're doing more and more interviews. So yeah, we'd love to have him on.
Put us in contact and we'd love to have him on.
Okay, I actually got to go run because I lost my cell phone. So.
No worries, man. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Doug.